This is the spirituality of work, where do we go from here? I'm Kathy Finley, and this is, I hope, a bit of a culmination of our week together looking at the spirituality of work. But if you're just joining us for the first time, very, very welcome. We will again begin with the litany of work, and as I mentioned last time, the plan is to have a more specifically prayerful and instead of talking about spirituality, more delving into spirituality today as we look at work in a number of ways and helping ourselves make connections and carrying hopefully something from the time of reflecting on these connections with us as we go. I don't know who would like to read the litany of work today. Anybody interested in doing that? Any volunteers?
I've done it once.
Okay. Go ahead. So it's "We praise you, God," is the response to the litany.
We give thanks, O God, for the work of our lives.
We praise you, God.
For the work of our hands.
We praise you, God.
For the work of our minds.
We praise you, God.
For the work of our hearts.
We praise you, God.
For the enlightening work of teachers, librarians, students, and coaches.
We praise you, God.
For the healing work of doctors, nurses, and counselors.
We praise you, God.
For the creative work of artists, musicians, painters, and sculptors.
We praise you, God.
For the precise work of engineers, scientists, and computer specialists.
We praise you, God.
For the nurturing work of homemakers, parents, and guardians.
We praise you, God.
For the wise work of retirees and grandparents.
We praise you, God.
For the proclaiming work of writers, photographers, editors, and publishers.
We praise you, God.
For the trustworthy work of accountants, bankers, lawyers, politicians, and salespeople.
We praise you, God.
For the faith-filled work of ordained religious and lay ministers.
We praise you, God.
For the protective work of police, firefighters, and military personnel.
We praise you, God.
For the dedicated work of secretaries, receptionists, and bookkeepers.
We praise you, God.
For the compassionate work of volunteers.
We praise you, God.
For the judicious work of managers, administrators, directors, and supervisors.
We praise you, God.
For the fruitful work of farmers, fishers, growers, and gardeners.
We praise you, God.
For the steadfast work of those who manufacture products.
We praise you, God.
For the constructive work of builders, surveyors, architects, masons, and carpenters.
We praise you, God.
For the efficient work of those who transport people and things by bus, train, plane, taxi, truck, and boat.
We praise you, God.
For the hospitable work of cooks, waiters and waitresses, cashiers, hotel and motel workers.
We praise you, God.
For the clarifying work of television, radio, and news media workers.
We praise you, God.
For the dependable work of telephone and postal workers.
We praise you, God.
For the good work of all other workers.
We praise you, God.
For our work which sheds light on the darkness.
We praise you, God.
For our work which creates order from chaos.
We praise you, God.
For our work which builds peace out of hostility.
We praise you, God.
For our work which helps others.
We praise you, God.
For our work which serves others.
We praise you, God.
For our work which empowers others.
We praise you, God.
For our work which inspires others.
We praise you, God.
For our work which builds your kingdom.
We praise you, God.
Thank you. Please, if you have not taken a copy of this litany of the work, please do so. And there's a prayer that we'll use on the back of that sheet, so I'll be handing copies of that a little bit later. Having listened to a talk from here on tape in the last few days, I'm aware that that if anybody's listening to this tape later, they won't be able to see what we have around us, and kind of just to make sure that we're all aware of what's here, I wanted to share with you what I've put on the table, and then if anybody else wants to add anything, and then mention the things that are up on the board up there that are things that I thought of that I couldn't get easily to put on the table. Mitch was going to bring our camera over, but he forgot, and I didn't have time to go back, but we've got, you know, a pot and a couple of, I found these over on the shelf, and I thought those were a good symbol of workers of the world and so on, and a weaving I've just finished, and hiking boots, and some lovely pictures, and a children's book, and a notebook, and a Bible. There's a toothbrush there, some money, a cassette tape. Oh, there's a couple of things of Band-Aids, and a book, C.S. Lewis book, and I brought a proof of a book I've just finished, and a newspaper, working gloves, brick, broom, a cup, another book. Is that yours?
Worship is theology.
Oh, okay, great. And a briefcase. And then we've got things up on the board like trowel and camera, French fry container. I was trying to think of an image to use for fast food workers because it's an increasing part of the economy. It seems like stethoscope, an oar or sail, calculator, calendar, syringe, gradebook, hard hat, fishing pole, laundry basket, chef's hat, musical instrument, coach's whistle, clipboard, barber's cape, a microphone, garbage can, a saw, hammer, or wrench, computer, diaper, circuit tester, rocking chair, paintbrush, paper bag, beaker, telephone, drawing pad, barometer, pitchfork, a shovel, a crutch, a T-square, a watering can. Are there some other things that seem glaringly missing to you that you'd like to add to this? Because I'd be glad to add some things to it. One that I forgot to mention on the table, I realized I purposely went over to Narnia to get some of these blocks and found the working gloves when I went, which I had up on the board and I could erase. But I wanted to read you something about that I found in this working resource that I've mentioned earlier. It's a quote from Dorothy Zola. I never know how to say her name exactly, but anyway, talking about the work of children, and I really liked it. She says, several years ago, I discovered the meaning of work when I contacted the teacher of my youngest child, then a first grader at an excellent school in Manhattan. One day, I became impatient with my daughter's progress at school. They had not yet taught her at age 6 to read or write. So I visited her teacher to ask when the children would start to work. Work, he scoffed. What do you mean? You're talking about work. Can't you see what's going on here? Don't you see that these strong workers, these children, are building a town with their blocks? He sent me home with this response, a response I was to mull over and benefit from in ensuing years. His response changed my mind, moving me from myopic, production-oriented perspective on work to a more humane understanding of work. I discovered the meaning of work in its three essential dimensions: self-expression, social relatedness, and reconciliation with nature. There's lots of ways to work, and we've been trying to emphasize that sort of thing all week. Okay, so we want to roll around some questions related to the things we've been taking a look at, and kind of tweak our minds just a bit more in terms of making these connections and hoping that the connections stay a while as we leave this time together. Here's a comment, a pastor from Allentown, Pennsylvania. Last Wednesday, I was talking with someone who asked me where my church was. 5th Street behind the post office, I answered without even stopping to think. Today, as I do think about it, another answer occurs to me. It is an answer more fundamentally true. Where is St. John's Lutheran Church? In Barbara Fenstermaker's kitchen, where she is beginning to prepare supper. In the classroom, where Suzanne Ely is finishing a lesson. By the hospital bed, where Kathy Bush is answering a patient's question. At Air Products, where Peg Kiddick is listening to one of her employees' problems. on the road with Keith Loudenslager as he finished a delivery, and even at Fifth Street behind the post office where Bob Ott is tutoring an adult literacy student. Where is St. John's Lutheran Church? Or fill in the blank, of course. Wherever you are as you live out your life as a disciple of Jesus Christ, you are the body of Christ ministering in and through the love of God. And we know that, but we so easily forget it. At least I do. I can't speak for you in the midst of our lives. And I forgot a story I wanted to share with you. I know I've read it not too long ago for the second or third time, but couldn't locate it, but I think I can give the gist of it, though I'm not sure at times of my storytelling. It's the story about the guy who was working as a bricklayer, I've got the brick out there, and was approached in the Middle Ages asking, "Well, what are you doing?" "Well, I'm putting these bricks together, and I'm putting this one on here, and I have to make sure the rows are straight so that I, you know, if this row isn't straight, when I build the next row, it's not going to be straight enough, and the wall won't be right." Meanwhile, when someone near him was asked, "What are you doing?" his response was, "I'm building a cathedral." You know, same task, different sense of vision about it. And I think that's what we're after, is that sense of, yes, I want to make this row straight, and I'm building a cathedral. How do we keep that sense of building the kingdom as the litany ended? Dietrich Bonhoeffer had this to say in Letters and Papers from Prison: "I discovered later, and I am still discovering right up to this moment, that it is only by living completely in this world that one learns to have faith. One must completely abandon any attempt to make something of oneself, whether it be a saint or a converted sinner or a churchman, a so-called priestly type, a righteous man or an unrighteous one, a sick man or a healthy one. By this worldliness, I mean living unreservedly in life's duties, problems, successes and failures, experiences and perplexities. In so doing, we throw ourselves completely into the arms of God, taking seriously not our own sufferings, but those of God in the world, watching with Christ in the Gethsemane." And we are, and we spent a lot of time yesterday talking about where is the experience of sin, temptation, evil, and pain in the midst of our work life. And I want to shift our emphasis in some ways, not forgetting that certainly, but look at more of where is the dying, but also the rising in our work environment. I promise I won't just throw quotes at you, but this is one of my absolute favorites of all time that I often use when I'm talking about the holiness of family life as well. And it seems to me to fit pretty well here. Frederick Buechner, I hope you've discovered, an excellent Presbyterian writer and minister who has some amazing things to say. And the end of this is one that I have had a friend do in calligraphy, and it sits over Mitch's desk where he writes. He says, "I discovered that if you really keep your eye peeled to it and your ears open, if you really pay attention to it, even such a limited and limiting life as the one I was living on Rupert Mountain in rural, I think, Vermont, as I remember, opened up onto extraordinary vistas. Taking your children to school and kissing your wife goodbye, eating lunch with a friend, trying to do a decent day's work, hearing the rain patter against the window. There is no event so commonplace but that God is present within it, always hiddenly, always leaving you room to recognize God or not recognize God, but all the more fascinatingly because of that, all the more compellingly and hauntingly. If I were called upon to state in a few words the essence of everything I was trying to say, both as a novelist and as a preacher, it would be something like this. Listen to your life. See it for the fathomless mystery that it is. In the boredom and pain of it, no less than in the excitement and gladness, touch, taste, smell your way to the holy and hidden heart of it, because in the last analysis, all moments are key moments, and life itself is grace." Just remind me of that quote.
Who is that again?
Frederick Buechner, B-U-E-C-H-N-E-R. He's written a number of essays and other writings. And I can't tell you right off which book this is from. It's from a book of his, you know, day by day, and this is the quote for January 1st, so I've just kind of used that version of it, but I don't know what it's from originally. So, so what are we to do with these thoughts? An interesting theological question for us for a moment. What does God wear to work? Or what is God's job description? What do you think?
We wear. What we wear.
What we wear?
Creation.
Mm-hmm.
I think to love, like if you're just thinking of it as like a verb, love.
Yeah, very job description.
Mm-hmm. It can also be as clothes too, clothed in love.
For me, very connected to that, I've mentioned a time or two that a lot of the stuff I usually do is involved with marriage.
Could you speak a little louder, please?
Sure, sorry. I've mentioned before that and most of what I usually do is related to marriage and family work and to personal skills related to that. And what I find that is clearly in common with that whole situation, can we make room so she can join us? Is the, besides this business of love, and I don't want to shift from it, the question that we're considering is, what does God wear to work, and what's God's job description? And I think very much related to God's job description being love, and what God wears to work is love, and what we wear to work. Very much related to that, and what I was attempting to do with these images and the things on the board is to help us see again, and through these quotes, what is right before our eyes is very holy. And I think that's what I find I can really easily miss. And I think if there's one thing in whatever we're involved in and however we see our work, if we can help with beginning with ourselves, but with all those that we work to help them see the holiness of what's right before their very eyes and the goodness that is there. And that doesn't mean, it seems to me, a Pollyanna approach. It doesn't mean not naming where the evil lies, but it is because of the seeing it as all holy and as God at work in all the ways that we're doing what we're doing, that we can see then at times where that is not at work and name it as such. But I just think that is what Jesus' incarnation is all about, is that it's all holy. And again, I can't speak from your faith tradition, but from my Catholic tradition, I know that there at times is a sense of these holy things with a capital H over here, places, people, things, that I've not allowed, that those in my tradition have not allowed us, it hasn't allowed us at times enough to see everything as holy with a small H, and it doesn't make, you know, the times of worship and so on less holy, but makes it in fact more holy. Any other thoughts on this business of what God wears to work or God's job description?
When I was a practicing physician, my children would ask me, "What do you do?" And so I would tell them, "Well, I take care of people," and then I became a hospital administrator. And then they asked me, "What do you do?" And I said, "Oh, I don't know what I do," you know. And then the only way that I could explain it to them is, well, I was the daddy of the hospital, right? And they say, oh, okay, so then they can go off and play, right? And so, you know, I mean, our images of what God is really depend on what our life has been like and what maybe our family experience has been too. So we can't always use it as a positive image, but sometimes that can be used as an image of, well, it does whatever needs to be done, you know, in that kind of sense, that in order to keep things going.
Right. I would like us to think about a couple of questions, and I'd ask you to either jot down some ideas on this or just think about it for a moment yourself before commenting on it. Maybe I'll put them up here on the board. The first one is one way that I can more clearly see the connection between my work and spirituality now is. And the other one is one way that I will express or nurture that connection. Maybe there aren't any ways that you can more clearly see the connection between work and spirituality. But maybe there are. I'm assuming, because I know by faces that a number of you have been at other sessions, not just based on what we talked about today. Or nurture that connection is. And the reason that I'd like to ask you to think about it before we discuss it is this. Some of us tend to think first and speak after, and some of us that are more extroverted can tend to speak first and think more deeply later. I found in my classroom experience especially that if I just throw out a question, as I have had a number of times this week, speaking first types tend to jump right in with both feet, and the thinking first folks are still, that's a really good question. And about the time us talkers have finished kind of winding our mouths down, then the thinkers are about ready to respond and we're ready to move on to something else. So this gives catch-up time for all of us to really think first. So that's why I'm asking that you give some consideration to these questions first. How many people would like a bit more time? Okay. Any thoughts about these questions then? Welcome in. Pull in the chair. Anything that occurs to you as far as a way that you can more clearly see the connection between work and spirituality now than previously?
I think one thing that I would take away from this class is the concept of each of us has a calling. Mm. You know, I always thought of a pastor as being called and maybe a layperson being called to a church responsibility, but not necessarily a layperson being called to a job responsibility. So I think that, for me, that has hit home. I think that's something I'll take away that I will remember.
And does that fit in terms of your own experience? I don't remember your...
I work in sales, pharmaceutical sales. it fits.
Definitely. It's pretty clear when the fit is right and when it's not, in my experience. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you.
Sure.
Well, I am. For those of you who've been here all week, I came in at the beginning of the week with pretty much anger about the school year I had just finished. And I've been thinking about that a lot this week. And realizing that I haven't been myself in the classroom all year. So as I was hiking today, I was thinking about how can I be myself when I'm in the classroom and not just the person that's expected to get all this stuff done. Because the reason I was late is I was in the library looking for my object, which is an Escher print that I have posted on the back of my room. It's one of those multi-layer, where you see the surface, then you see what's happening underneath it, and you see what's happening that. And it's a reminder to me that what's really important in that classroom is what's happening under the surface. But it's so easy to lose that perspective. And it was gone last year. Having 30 third graders in the same room might have something to do with the fact that it was hard to maintain. But finding a way to help structure conversation so it's concrete enough so third graders can participate, but it's not a teacher-directed work. Mm-hmm. It's drawing these kids out, and so they can be themselves in the classroom, and I can too. Mm-hmm.
And somehow it's got to nurture not only them, but you as well,
yeah.
Or you lose your ability to nurture them.
Yeah, and when those moments happen, when kids are engaged in what's happening, the energy in that room is fantastic, and the discipline's problems take a tremendous plunge.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That didn't happen last year.
But right now I don't care.
I haven't been here all week, but I've put a lot of thought into this topic for several years. I have one of those executive jobs. You're often advised that the only thing that matters is garbage statements like creating value for shareholders. And the reward is supposed to be your personal wealth. And I struggle with that. But I just recently remembered advice I got when I was looking for a large accounting firm from one of the senior partners, who said he always reminds himself that he is just borrowing his position. He is blessed with the job that he has today, but he's charged to be a steward of the position that he has. And in that respect, he needs to make sure that he's preserving things. He's not just seeking to accomplish something for himself, but seeking to teach others how to carry on. And I have actually gotten most of my personal satisfaction in the last year out of taking the time, and I have a brand new secretary, and trying really hard to take the time when I give her instruction to make sure she understands why. Mm-hmm. And you have that moment where you're taking extra time to explain something and you see a light go on, that they have learned something and something they're going to remember. And to me, that's way more satisfying than the net income of our company, because it's those things that will go on forever and will create more.
Yes.
And if I'm not doing that, then I feel like my job is worthless.
I'm really reminded of the story I said earlier about the brick here. Is this, am I building a cathedral or not? That's what I hear what you're saying.
Teach everybody who works for you, you're building a cathedral.
Yeah, help them to see that as well. And another way that energy could take shape is in terms of mentoring. which I hear a bit in what you're talking about. And I think that's a valuable opportunity, you know, many of us may have as we are established in our professions and have a chance to really pass on and share that sense of vision and sense of call, which we talked about earlier as well. Master teacher kind of things that, you know, may happen in various kinds of ways. I remember when I was a very new mom, latching on to a woman who I called my master mom in some ways. I really appreciated how she was with her children. And she really was an influence to me in inspiration in my role in that respect in a much more powerful way than I think my own mother was. I have an okay relationship with my mom, but that was a really important person in my life at that point.
You know, I think for me, I can maybe even put something practical, put a sign up. Being a child psychiatrist, I can say we're building humans, or we're building human beings. Just as a reminder that that's what we're doing when these little kids come up, or when these not so little kids, when they're adolescents, and I'm my size, you know, I mean, they're just towering over you, and they are yelling and screaming at you for doing what you've ever done to them, and drama about anything. I'm just sitting here, and they come to me, you know, and they're yelling at me, and says, I'm trying to build a human being here, you know, and I think that will help me, you know, instead of having to get locked into the moment of struggling with this, and I go, oh, okay, well, let's see what we can do here.
Well, and I would amend it just slightly.
Yeah.
I'm trying to help build.
Yeah, that's right.
Because it's ultimately God's work.
That's right.
And you're not doing it alone.
That's right.
There's a lot of, you know, there has to be that community of folks around that human being for it to be built.
That's right, that's right.
He, she.
Am I the only grandma in here? Am I the only retired person?
No, I think there's a couple more.
Well, you know, there's a lot of joy in taking care of children and walking with them and talking with them and showing them flowers and bugs and everything. And I used to be a nanny for this little boy, and he'd watch the ants. We'd go on these very slow walks, and we'd watch the ants and everything. When I told him that birds eat worms, I thought he was going to cry. He didn't know that. Oh, I thought, well, maybe I shouldn't have told him. But I have very good memories, and the family is still friends of mine, and supportive, you know, support each other.
That's great.
Well, I'm retired, too. But I still have interest in what I was doing. I was a kindergarten teacher, and I still go back and sub in kindergarten or volunteer for around special holidays with my favorite stories to read and so forth. But at that level, it's kind of hard when you see some progress, but you really don't know just what is retained through the years. And then somewhere along the line, you meet one of them, they tell you what they remembered.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's like confirmation. God, these kids, they never think that they learned anything, you know? And it goes into the air somewhere. And all of a sudden, they come back and say, oh, yeah, I remember that, you know?
I remember being told at one point, I mean, I think a number of us in the room were teachers in one sense or another, and I'm watching folks work on craft things and so on, being told by a former teacher who was at that point an administrator, a really helpful thing for me that as I do mostly people-oriented things where there is so little sense of an immediate product, that it's important to have some hobbies, some things where you can see a finished product. It's really important.
Build a pot. Yeah.
There it is. Yeah. I can say, oh,
doesn't
yes,
talk
I
back.
Yeah. I think that's pretty important at times.
Well, you see my pictures there. Yes. This is my school book. Yeah.
Well, when my kids were infants, I did counter-cross stitch all those nice little rows or something. And I can't stand it now. I couldn't touch it. But boy, that's part of my
I think for me, training women on welfare for 8 years in 2 week classes, hundreds of them, they arrive on the scene terrified. Most of them abused, heavily abused. General population tearing them down, saying they shouldn't be supporting them. Being served by a bureaucracy that is cold, fears of getting their money cut off. And by the time we're through training, certainly God's hand has been in it. And at the end of 2 weeks, many of them have their dignity. We have a saying of putting rubber bands around their wrists so that they keep trashing themselves. We have them snap it all the time. And by the end, they're not doing that anymore. And to watch weeks later them bloom, as God's hand is definitely in it. Mm-hmm. In my work. Particularly when they call and tell me that. Tell us a year or two later that they changed jobs and got the promotions.
So, not only does your faith and your spirituality give you a sense of building your cathedral, but it also gives you a sense of hope, of possibilities, so that you can see far beyond where they can see, and you can share that sense of possibilities with them.
When they come back into the classes, that's the real piece that will be involved.
So you allow them then to take on that nurturing, mentoring role in a way. Which, you know, I'm also thinking about has been part of their sense of woundedness that they've, you know, been nurturing in unhealthy environment.
And I think it's God's hand with me, too. Very humble. I mean, many of them, by far, just as gifted, if not more than I am.
Well, don't you think, no matter what your profession or calling or anything is, if you do ask to be guided, that you have to know that there will be the results even if you don't see
them. Yes. So that brings us to the second question of how do I remember to ask to be guided? How do I keep that awareness, whether I'm in the classroom or I'm in a seminar with, you know, a welfare for former welfare moms, or I'm, you know, selling pharmaceuticals or whatever I'm doing, how do I keep that awareness before me? Carrie, I'll pick on you for a second. I keep in my mind the image that you were talking about the other day of literally down on your knees between appointments, between working with various clients, and that that really stuck with me as far as the...
Yeah, that's what on that first one, I was thinking how I often have court hearings, and I have 4 or 7, 9 matters, you know. And so I have a routine where I park and how I go to the courthouse. And so I was thinking that I usually check in with God as my client on that walk, you know. And I ask him, well, what do you want me to do today? And he says, just take it easy. He's real gentle with me. At the end of the day, everybody is... heard what the judges said about their cases, I check in with him, and hopefully he's still the same way. You know, go easy, take it easy, don't worry, you know, it's not a big deal, it's just another day in the week and stuff.
I like it. How about other people, as far as how you can, or how you have kept that awareness going in the course of the work day, or in the course of any day?
I think sometimes with teaching, it's a very humbling experience when you meet a former student and they will say something they remember about you, and you're thinking, is that what you remember? And it's just that you never know when you're influencing someone.
Yeah.
And you need to be aware that something that you think is just really mundane and really boring might really be touching someone. And then on the other side, something you think is fantastic goes right up and top. Nobody ever catches that.
That's right.
I have found when there's some quote that inspires me to put that up on my wall and just have one, because I get too distracted, one at a time. That not only keeps me in line, it also brings comments from my clients and opens up opportunities to talk about that. And I mean, I do taxes, and we, but yet, if I have something to do with spirituality, they would love to talk about that. So, you know.
So it works for you, but it also is an invitation.
Is an invitation.
That's correct.
Yeah.
This is an okay topic to discuss.
Yeah.
I think most of us need some sort of quiet time to basically fill ourselves up with Jesus' love so we can express it to others. I'm afraid that I don't do as good a job as I could getting some of that quiet time. I heard a speaker recently called Toi Campola, and he talked very much about taking that time to really fill yourself up. He typically does it early in the morning. With reflection, Bible reading, whatever it might be, whatever fits you, but it takes some self-discipline to do that. I think it does then allow you in the franticness of your day to remember that love. Hopefully you fill yourself up with that morning.
Yeah, that can happen in a commute to work. It can happen in a quick prayer before I sit down at the computer if I'm going to do that, or I'm heading into the classroom for the day, or for some of us, the middle of the day is hard to, you know, sometimes lunch hour is as hectic as a lot of the time, but
it depends a little bit if you're a morning person or an evening person. For me, early morning is the best.
It is for me too, and I'm not a morning person, but if I don't grab it in the morning, I feel like my whole day is off balance, and it's hard for me to do that first thing in the morning, because by the time I get up and get going before the rest of the house is, I'm just sort of half there to my ear. As a non-morning person, it's hard to get much further than, well, Lord, I'm here, but just that quiet time is still pretty important.
Sometimes that reassurance is very important.
That I'm here?
I'm here. It's early, but I am.
You know, I'm a consultant to a burn unit as well, and the courageousness of some of the individuals who have had to have thermal injuries. I live in Alaska, and many of the, we have people from all over the world trying to climb Mount McKinley, and they come in with thermal injuries or frostbite, and then because of the ruralness of our community, we then have people who are in boating accidents, who propane explosions and stuff like this. And just to see the courageousness of some of these people having to go through a 50% total body surface area burn, it's an amazing experience. And to be able to be there with them, and it really becomes a privilege that you really do have an opportunity to just walk with them and to be with them. And It's pretty awesome when you begin to see this, and how many of them go through, you know, most of them get depressed, most of them get anxious, because you would, and you internally support them. But the enormous support that they have, and the courageousness that they have, and getting better, and having to walk in pain, and doing other kinds of things, pretty awesome sight to see. And it really makes you aware of the gift that they have of living and life and wanting to be there. It makes me very thankful.
Mm-hmm. I was thinking as you were talking that most of us don't have that kind of dramatic experience of people in need, but we all encounter in our daily lives and our work in various ways people in need. And that whole business of not just, you know, checking in with God as client as far as how am I doing, what do I need, but, you know, that praying for, whether it's coworkers or others that we know of, students, I pray for students a lot, I pray for, you know, my children, all those sorts of things. I think we do that a lot and maybe haven't named that yet, but I know, and you perhaps do as well, folks who keep this good long list of names of people that they're praying for constantly, and sometimes, you know, if the list gets too long, here, Lord, here's the list. You know, I mean, I think those are tremendous. That's a tremendous ministry that can give us a sense when we can't do anything more to fix it right now. Sure. That, you know, we've let God take over.
One thought that I have is, you know, I've been wrestling a little bit with this in the last 5 weeks. 2 months as I'm on a sabbatical, and it has to do with worship. And I think the thing that I'm beginning to realize about worship that maybe I didn't know as much or as well as I should have before is that the very gathering of people as they come together is empowering us in our daily living. And I always believe that, but the kind of, you know, putting the so-called putting it right into our life has to do with how we treat each other with compassion and forgiveness, and how that enters into the normal daily routine to come up against people we just constantly are. Either we're going to react to them negatively, or we're going to be able to be a healing person and accepting. And sometimes you get so worn out by all that, we need to go back to the source. And worship, the liturgy of the church, is that constant source of how God enters into that life that I have and empowers through Christ my ability to say, forgive me. Mm-hmm. I forgive you. I'm enriched with the Word of God, celebration of the Eucharist, which is empowering that. And that the rhythm of the worship service becomes a rhythm of the daily life.
And I was thinking, as you were talking, you were describing your sabbatical, that in a sense, what worship can be is a mini sabbatical in the sense of helping us to step outside. In a sense, step outside what we're doing as far as work, and again, the broad sense of the word work, but not to leave it behind, but to somehow take those aspects of our daily lives to worship, knowing that that's what we take again with us, and that's the trick of how to do that well.
And we need the other people there.
Yes.
Worship has to have community, doesn't it?
Yes, definitely.
Just God and I. You know, it's not related.
Yeah, it's incomplete. Yeah.
It's the energy of a people that helps empower my life.
Those who may not have been here all week, this Our Human Hands is a book that is in the bookstore that has a lot about the spirituality of work, and at the very end, the last chapter talks, I think, quite well about one local church's approach to really explicitly bringing in the world of work into the worship setting. And I want to jump in with a quote, another quote from Martin Luther, talking about this same idea that we've been talking about. Your work is a very sacred matter. God delights in it, and through it, God wants to bestow his blessing on you. This praise of work should be inscribed on all tools, in the forehead and the face that sweat from toiling. For the world does not consider labor a blessing, therefore it flees and hates it. But the pious who fear the Lord labor with a ready and cheerful heart, for they know God's command and will. Thus a pious farmer sees this verse written on his wagon and plow. A cobbler sees it on his leather and awl. A laborer sees it on wood and iron. Happy shall you be, and it shall be well with you. This is the way I am about building the reign, the kingdom of God. And the more we can help remind ourselves of that, the more the connection is building. And it really shapes not just who we are, but how we work. And I've heard that in several people, whether it's the quote in your office setting or how you work with folks who are unemployed and so on. I would like to, at this point, other comments maybe that of things that I've just said that
I have my quote in my office, and it's a plaque. It's a Bible verse. It's a translation of Micah 6:8. And it's become my favorite. And it's, the translation is simplified in that, you know, this is what the Lord asks of you, only this. Act justly, love tenderly, and walk humbly with your God. And I try at least once a day turn around and look at it.
Yeah.
Ask myself if I'm acting justly and loving the people I'm working with and being humble about it.
Yeah.
And that's a tough triple.
It is. Yes.
But it's worth the effort.
Yes. That's excellent. I think the environment that we create for ourselves, and I mean, sometimes we don't have a lot of control over that, for our work, makes a big difference in shaping how we are about what we're doing. This is a worker's prayer that's on the back of that page. So if you already have a copy of it, maybe hand this back or hang on to it, whatever you like. I'd like to for us to pray this together, and then I have a final song meditation to share with you. Let's see. How about if we break this up and read it around? Maybe each person could read a line or two, like. I'll read the beginning, and then if you could read the part in bold, and then we'll just keep going around as long as it takes. Dear Lord, as I pray to you now, my mind is full of my work, its pleasures and its pains, its stresses and rewards are burned into my brain. Quiet my soul for these few moments and hear my prayer as one of your workers in the world.
My work is hard, Lord. I need your counsel and comfort.
When things fall apart, when I'm confronted with evil, when my co-workers' needs are too great, when I'm tired to the insides of my brain, when my work is not appreciated.
My work is necessary, Lord. I need your gifts and spirit.
When things are developing well, when I'm making positive changes, when others' lives have meaning because of my work, when society is made better because of what I do, when I'm working efficiently and effectively, when I'm honored as a valuable worker.
Every day of my work.
I want to remember that you are my God.
I need to know that you're there with me.
I count on your blessings for my successes.
I want to thank you for the chance to work in this place.
I need courage and conviction to see myself as your worker.
For your gifts and your grace that come to me as a worker, I praise your name and thank you for being my God.
Amen. Okay. I would like you to picture the places that you usually work. Think about the things that we have here on the table and the phrases that I have on the table here. And as I play for you now a song that I hope will help you to really pray about that, I am very aware that through this week, as we've been considering together, the whole question of and aspects of the spirituality of work, that this is holy ground. And that's the song that I want to play for you. We're standing on holy ground.